Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Lisa. Long time no record.
No, it's long time no record, but not long time no see. We'll talk about that in a second. We just got to spend some time together on Monday, but we have taken a little bit of break from recording. It is the typical end of, I feel like we go through this every year, the end of school year craziness dash where we both feel like we are like drowning and cannot come up for air. So we had to put the podcast on the back burner for just a little bit. We didn't have any, you know, pressing news, any pressing topics to talk about. So we decided that just like in running and training cycles, it's good to take a recovery cycle. And we took a little bit of a recovery cycle. So here we are. We are back.
Yes, I missed you. I really love our weekly recording sessions. I feel like I've said this before, it is such a joy to catch up with you, Lisa, in this way. And I just really missed you. So I'm glad that we're back at it. And I'm also glad though that we took a break because we needed it. How are you doing?
I'm great. And I was going to say, what I loved was that we both, unbeknownst to each other, signed. There was a little Juneteenth race here that one of our racing teammates was helping organize. And he sent out a message several weeks ago saying, hey, if anyone wants to come do this race, you know, I'd love for people to sign up. And I kind of held on to that email, thinking in the back of my head, maybe I would do it. When I was in Roanoke with Alex last week, which is also a reason, you know, we didn't record, but both been away off and on. And I thought maybe I would do a 5K when I was in Roanoke. I've been trying to do like a 5K every few weeks as sort of my speed work. I talked about that before. I don't really do speed work. I pick out races. So I kind of had that in the back of my mind. And then I did not do the one in Roanoke. So I decided to sign up for it. And I got there and I parked and I did a little loop. I was doing a little jogging, like warm up around the parking lot. And I see this car and it has a Run Farther and Faster sticker. I'm like, oh my gosh, who has a Run Farther? And I'm like, wait a minute, that's Julie's car. So I texted you and then immediately right after that ran into you finishing up your warm up. And so we got to see each other and hang out at a race, which we have not been able to do. And that was such a, such a treat. It was really, I left that, the race at the end, just feeling really good for the rest of the day that we got to share that together.
Me too, Lisa. Similarly, I kind of put the note regarding the race on the back burner and thought, you know what, that's a Monday and that would actually work really well, and kind of wanted to see how I felt. And I signed up probably about 4 or 5 days before the race, and I was warming up and then I saw you and I was so excited, Lisa. Number one, I think it's hilarious that neither of us knew that the other was signing up. It was a very small race. And number two, Lisa, I really can't remember the last time that we were able to do a race together because, of course, I've been injured for 6 months. And then before that, our schedules weren't syncing up that much to race together. And I really love racing with you. And it was so much fun. And unexpectedly, I had no feelings about this race. And once I saw you, I thought, oh, it's going to be a good day because Lisa's here and it was really nice to see you. So do you want to talk a little bit about the race? I think your story is pretty funny.
So like I said, I've been doing 5Ks every few weeks. I just, you know, if I see one, I sign up for it. Just like to get in some faster running when I'm not training. I haven't started, I'm going to be training for Chicago, but I really haven't started. I'll start kind of that build. Probably start in July. So in the next few weeks, but in the meantime, I kind of like to just, I really, as much as I think I hate 5Ks, I really love them because they're short, you're done really fast. And then you can go about the rest of your day. Like it doesn't take your whole day. You don't feel sore after necessarily. I mean, you know, a little bit recovery needed, but it's not like it takes you out of running for a week. So it's just fun. And the first one I did was, I think in May, it was the Police Week 5K downtown. The second one I did was a really fun one in Columbia, Maryland called the Matzo Ball 5K. And then I did this one and they were all very different courses, different, you know, kind of elevation profiles, different weather for each of them. And in every single one, Julie, I told you this at the race day, I have finished to the second well, maybe 1 second off, exactly the same time. And in every single one, I have been the second woman. And in every single one, I think I've seen the first woman go by me after about mile two and just been like, here we go again. I cannot catch that person. So it's just very, if nothing, I'm consistent. I feel like I was thinking about this. I'm like, well, I can't get out of that rut. I've been finished in 2055 or 2056 for each of those three races. And I even think I haven't looked back, but I think the last 5Ks I did whenever I was doing 5Ks before, I think they were also the same time. I think I finished in 2055 or 2056 for probably the last five or six 5Ks that I've done. And I can't get out of that. Like, I'm like, can I finish a little faster? Can I like get a little bit? But then I was thinking about it. I don't do anything to get faster at the 5K distance. I'm not doing 5K training. I'm not going out and trying to get faster at the 5K. So the definition of insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So certainly I'm probably not getting any faster at the 5K or changing my results at the 5K. I just find it kind of ironic that any given day, any given race, any given weather, any given course, hitting the same exact finish time. So it was fun. I felt really good. The woman, I would say girl, who won is an eighth grader. And she was so strong, Julie. She was on my shoulder the entire first 2 miles. She was just right there, like right on my shoulder. And I kept thinking, like, am I going to be able to like pull away from her? Are you going to be able to pull away from her? And I had this feeling deep down. You just know that feeling. She's 14 years old. I was like, she is just waiting. And sure enough, we hit the 2 mile marker, which was right before we took a right turn to take a long uphill finish. The course itself was pretty rolling and had some good downhill sections. I felt like we really could set some speed, but the last probably 0.6 to 0.8 miles was a slow uphill. And as soon as we started to turn that corner, she just took off like she'd been standing still the whole time. She just like, it was like she had another gear. And I was like, that is it. There is no way I'm going to be able to even keep up with her. So it was really awesome to watch her just take off and power up that hill. And I was thinking, you go, girl, like you are, that was really cool to watch. So she is phenomenal. And after the race, I actually talked to a friend of ours our racing teammate who had helped organize the race. And he's a coach at the local high school. And he said he actually just not long before had recruited her to come to the public high school from a private junior middle school to come to the high school and run with him, one for him, because he is intent on having, you know, a championship girls team this year. And so he was very excited. And I said, you've certainly got a strong runner there. So she was awesome. And I just want to say though, you know, I finished and not much long after I finished, I saw you coming up the finish straight really strong. And I saw the time on the clock and I remembered, you know, the time you had run at the beach, which was a much flatter course. I know you had mentioned on the podcast last time you had finished in about 23 minutes. And I saw the time on the clock was low 22s. It had just turned 22s. And I thought, she's totally crushed another minute on a harder, what I think was a probably harder course, crushed another minute off of her finish time. So, and of course, in between us, there was another like 15-year-old girl who finished. So I just kept thinking our age graded times are much faster than yours, but it was also inspiring and very, it was really great to see these young women that are coming up and these strong runners that are super, super young. So, but you looked really great at the finish and it was really exciting to see you finishing strong.
Thank you. I was really excited too. I think the difference for me between the last 5K I did, which I talked about on our last episode of the podcast, and this one was I wasn't fearful. I was scared during the last 5K and I was scared to push because I wasn't sure how my body would respond. Now that I had the data and I knew it was okay for me to push, I pushed for this one and I felt great. And my knee felt great. And cardiovascularly, it was hard, as is any 5K. And Lisa, I'm most excited about the fact that I finished, I think in like 22, 20 something. I forgot my times right before I was injured were not reflective of my normal 5K times because of course I've talked about this. I was dealing with some residual COVID issues. I'm reluctant to call it long COVID because I don't know if it would fall within that, but I definitely had suffered cardiovascularly and with respiratorily with racing and running fast. And my times were indicative of that. And I'm thrilled to share that my time in this race was about a minute faster than what I had been running before I got injured. So I do think that this injury, while I don't wish on anyone, ACL injuries are such a pain in the ass. It forced me to stop running for long enough that I was able to overcome that residual COVID crap that was still in me. And also being able to build back better with those strength training and whatnot has really benefited me as well. So I certainly hope for a continued upward trajectory. I understand that I will likely have some setbacks. That is common, but I'm so grateful for where I am. And it was really fun to be out there running a tough course and being able to challenge my body. I will mention, Lisa, with your consistency, I would disagree that with what you mentioned that you're doing the same thing over and over. I disagree. All three courses were different. And this course was not only hard because it was had a lot of rolling hills, but it also was very, very humid on Monday. So I disagree. I think the conditions were harder. So I'm going to say that you ran faster for this race than your previous races, which were likely on easier courses in likely better weather conditions, considering that you mentioned you ran one in early June and one in May. So that's where I'm going to go with
that. Well, thank you. That's very nice. I'll take that. But it's just, yes. it was funny it's funny because I had started my watch a little before the gun went off. So when I looked at my watch, when I finished, I thought, oh, I was a little over what I finished before. Like it's not 2055 again. And then they announced when they did the age group awards and they announced the time, my net time actually was 2055. And I thought that's just crazy. So anyway, hopefully I'll get in another couple 5Ks over the summer and maybe I'll go to the beach and go into a flatter course or find cooler weather or something and see if I can find some magic ingredient other than actually putting in the work, because that, like I said, it's not fair to expect to do better at a 5K when I'm not doing any 5K training, but you never know. Every day is a little bit different. So, but while we were there, what another nice part of that race was that we did get to connect with a lot of our friends in the running community, which is always what I love about these races, is getting to see people and chat with them and catch up. And one of those people was Harold Rosen, who is well known to local runners here and anyone who participates in the Montgomery County Roadrunners Club and their training programs. Harold is the program director for the Experience Marathon program, XMP, we call it here. And Harold doesn't like to flaunt his age or mention his age, but it is absolutely notable. And one of the reasons we admire him so much is that he turned 80 this year. And he doesn't look like he's 80. And I loved that when he got his age group award, it was the loudest round of applause from the people that were watching the awards. It was like everyone was so excited to see this 80-year-old guy who does not look 80 years old getting his award. And he has been, his longevity in his running career is just, it's impressive. And we know now as we're aging that it's not that easy to keep running and keep doing well and keep having a positive outlook and being such a positive force in the running community as you get older and you feel like you're starting to maybe, not do what you used to be able to do, but he is, we love him. And we both said to each other, we've got to have him on the podcast. So kind of cornered him at the race and said, hey, you want to be on our podcast? And really put him on the spot. And Harold, who again, doesn't like a lot of attention on himself, was kind enough to agree to join us today. So
I should mention, he ran his 5K in 27 minutes at age 80.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So anyone listening will understand that 27 minutes at age 80, 27 minutes at any age is a very impressive, solid 5K finish time. At age 80, it's just, and I saw him at Cherry Blossom 10 miler earlier this year, right after he finished. And I was looking up results and I, pulled his up. And of course he had won his age group there and he was surprised. And I thought, he had finished there. I don't remember his finish time there, but it was a very impressive finish time. And I said, how can you be surprised? That is an impressive finish time for any age. And certainly for the 80 plus age group. So he's just such a humble and modest and kind person. And it's really great to watch him still, continue to do so well in running. And he's a coach that we admire as well. As head of the XMP program, he's a running coach and he coaches a lot of runners and has coached a lot of runners over the years. So we admire that as well.
Yeah. So we were thrilled that he agreed to come out and join us on the podcast. And he shares his story, which we didn't know a lot about his personal story and how he started running. And it was really interesting. And then he also shared a lot about a coach we have admired and loved for years, Mike Broderick, who passed away in 2010. of lung cancer at age 56, way too young. And so many of us, including both of us, learned how to coach under Mike. Mike taught our RRCA course, the first one we took, and Mike is also was a fixture in our community. And certainly Harold talks about Mike's influence on his life and how Harold became the coach of this very large program in our area, and then provides a lot of nuggets of wisdom about coaching as well as running as a master's and grand master's runner. So it was a real treat to talk with him, and I'm so happy we had the chance to do that, Lisa. So before we turn it over to Harold, we just want to talk about, we don't usually have sponsors for our podcast. We've talked about why before, and it's just we really believe in delivering the information to our listeners, and we just don't, it's just not something we've explored, and perhaps that's short-sighted of us, but we're not doing this podcast thing to accumulate sponsors. However, a company came to us a couple of weeks ago, and many do, and we usually do not accept the opportunity, but this company intrigued us and we have decided to bring them on as a sponsor, and they're called Lagoon, and Lagoon sells customized pillows, and we value sleep so much. So Lisa, why don't you talk a little bit about this sponsor and the options for our listeners to try a Lagoon pillow?
Yeah, you know, it sounds silly. And like you said, we get a lot of emails and a lot of companies approaching us. And we have always said we've got to really believe in a product to promote it on our podcast or to our runners. And this one just spoke to us. We looked at the founder of the company, kind of the story behind the company. And he is a competitive athlete who, like us, valued sleep. And like me, was finding that he was buying pillows at like Target or Bed Bath & Beyond, and they were just, you know, not holding up well and, you know, tossing and turning at night. And you don't think about it, but your pillow is really important. So, and he and his wife started this company and really looked into creating a quality product that meets the needs of athletes and is very customizable to different characteristics. If you sleep on your back, if you sleep on your side, if you're somebody who gets hot when you sleep. And so we were intrigued and said, let us, you know, we're willing to try this out and see what we think. And he was kind enough to send us each, you know, we did the quiz. You take a quiz to answer some questions and you get a customized pillow. And we got those in the mail and he shipped those to us, and they actually come with some extra stuffing too. So if it's not like the right shape that you like, you can actually manually put in some extra stuffing. And we both tried it this past week, and I was impressed for a pillow. Like, you know, again, you think it's not a big deal. I've been looking forward to going to bed every night and putting my head down on this pillow, and it has been extremely comfortable. Unlike my other pillows that I have had, it does not, like, you know, lose its shape, and like it pops up every night. Like it's just, so far, again, it's only been a week, but it's been great and I've slept great. So I was really, like I told you, I was like, I'm actually really impressed with this pillow. And I really am, you know, I think the story of Lagoon speaks to both of us, of, you know, somebody who took it on their own to try to find a solution to an issue that athletes have. And like you said, we talk about the importance of sleep so much, and that's the only proven recovery modality. And it's so important. And so while we may think like a pillow, that's kind of a funny thing to talk about, like it's been, I've been looking forward to going to sleep. So we have a landing page that we can put in the show notes, and there is a, so that you can check out our listeners can check out the options, just check out the company, check out, you know, take the quiz. And then if you do decide to order a pillow, we have a code, it's RFF. It's on the landing page on the website that we'll post, and it's 15% off your first order. So I, like I said, we don't usually do this. We only do this when we really believe in a product and use it ourselves. And so that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah. So let us know if you end up buying one, if you like your Lagoon pillow. I'm an otter. What was yours, Lisa? I took the quiz.
Oh, I meant to look. I forget what mine was now. Yeah. Oh, hold on. Let's see. I can tell you mine. Hold on. I'm going back to look when we took the quiz. Yeah, you were an otter. I was the fox.
You are a fox.
I'm a fox. So yeah, all sorts of different kinds of pillows, depending on, like you said, we said, where you, how you sleep, you know, whether you prefer a firm pillow, a softer pillow. So yeah. So anyway, you know, for what it's worth, yeah, if anyone tries them, let us know. We're sold on the pillow.
Absolutely. So We're going to turn it over now to Harold Rosen. This was a fun interview. We hope everyone enjoys it. And thanks to everyone for sticking with us. We're sorry we took a few weeks off, but we're back. And Lisa, it's great to see you and have a great week.
You too, Julie.
Bye. Bye. Harold Rosen, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. This has been a long time coming. We've known you for years and admired you for years, and we're so excited to have you on the show today. So thank you, Harold, so much for joining us. And we want to get started by just having you introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hey, Julie and Lisa, I'm happy to be with you. This is great. My name's Harold Rosen. I've been running for a lot of years. I don't normally announce my age, but runners cannot hide that. So I turned 80 almost a half a year ago. Still running, happy to be doing so. Practice law, still do for many, many years. And that actually is what got me into running. And you may ask me how I did, and I'll answer that later.
What kind of law do you still practice, Harold?
I'll give you a general answer and then narrow it down. Contracts law, business law, contracts law, move that narrower to construction and engineering and a lot of government. Federal government, different governments, state governments, clients all over the country.
And Harold, you mentioned that that was how you got into running. And that's actually, Julie and I, how we both got into running. We both started running in law school as a stress release to kind of, you know, escape the stress of law school. That's when we both started running. How did law lead you to running?
I came at it a little later than you two did. I was called upon, very interesting, this would be back in the 70s. So I'm out of law school, but not that long ago, to go overseas. And it really was overseas projects where I had to spend a lot of time, but work my backside off with maybe a day off a week. With almost nothing else to do, and I took up running. This was Camp David, Peace Accords. I don't know if that means much. It's getting old now.
Yes.
Camp David, Peace Accords, a peace treaty between Israel and Egypt, which actually led to other Arab countries joining in. Two of our clients were called upon. Part of the United States commitment was to build two air bases for Israel in Israel so that Israel could return to Egypt, the Sinai, where Israel had built two air bases. So they had to go to Congress to get appropriations and so forth. Two of our clients were selected, each one to build one of those air bases in Israel. So there I am. Oh, and they needed a lawyer to get over there as fast as possible. And I was able to do that. So I stayed with one of the projects in particular more than the other, all the way through past the end of the completion of it. But it wasn't in Israel. Then people got wind of my work there, and I was asked to go to Saudi Arabia. It's a little different. And I'm wondering, you know, people asked me, how are you going to tell your mother, nice Jewish boy like you is now working in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia? But there I was, and that's when I took up running, because when I would visit, and I was not there permanently, and this was a project to be built for Saudi Arabian Air Defense and Air Force throughout the country of Saudi Arabia. It was called Peace Shield. It was built by the United States government for Saudi Arabia, but at the expense of Saudi Arabia. The air bases in Israel were at the expense of the United States government. And I would stay with the single guys whenever I was there. There were a bunch of single guys. We were in a housing compound. The one day off, now you're changing your day off from Saturday in Israel to Friday in Saudi Arabia. But what did we do? We didn't even have any facilities for a gym or anything. And so we started running. I started running with them. Normally within the housing compounds, because it was inappropriate, unacceptable to be running in Saudi Arabia in hot weather in shorts. That was verboten. So we would run in the compound on their Fridays normally. And that got me started. And when I would return to the States home, I just continued some running. This is long before marathon running for me, but that's how I started. It was a stress reliever for me also, but more from the work than the law school itself.
That's very interesting too, because I find it ironic that the place where you chose to run is a place that would probably will be one of the most difficult places to start running, not only because it's hot, but also because, as you mentioned, culturally at the time, it wasn't seen as something that was, you know, supported. So the fact that you found a way to run and then continue doing so in the States really shows how much you must have taken to it and how good it made you feel from the outset. So taking what you were doing then and using it as a stress reliever, you've certainly come very far since then. When did you start getting into racing and competing in your running?
Once I had started that running limited regimen back in Saudi Arabia days, and you're right, we did go off the family compounds, but we had to be alert to the religious police who carried cattle prods, and they probably still do. If you couldn't get away from them, you were going to be cattle shot. I continued that at home, and more complicated addition to the story, and I think all that travel had a lot to do with a divorce. And I was living in downtown DC in a small apartment that had a gym next to it, next to the building that I was living in. And I became a gym rat of sorts. With a couple of other guys, we all show up whenever the place opened. It's, I think it was 6:30 a.m. And we all decided after about a year of this, we thought we ought to do something. I think one of us saw something in the newspaper about a Galloway training program for the Whitman Walker Clinic. And the three of us said, hey, why don't we all three sign up for this training program? Well, I was the only one that started and finished it, but that is then how I got further into running, into any kind of training program, actually. And it was a run walk. We all know that run walk program. I still highly support that for a lot of people. And then I don't remember my first race. I know I did my first marathon, which is what that program led us to, was Marine Corps in 1998. And whether I did any races before that, I don't recall, but I tend to doubt it because Galloway didn't really push a lot of races, short distance races. So 98 was my first marathon. And then you didn't ask me this, but from there I thought, you know what, I'm somewhat in shape. And I say somewhat in shape because it was not easy. The people I ran with, all of us were semi-injured. I even talked to Galloway and they wanted me to delay till the Philadelphia marathon. But I said, no, I'm going to do Marine Corps. But then once I was in that sort of shape, I thought, I can't fall out of this shape. I'll never get back into it again. So I just kept going.
And Harold, how many marathons do you, how many marathons have you done since then?
Do you keep Lisa, track? It's interesting. I do not really keep track. I do not really keep track of PRs. I tell people roughly 35 to 45 marathons I've run.
Yeah.
And that's probably accurate. Yep.
What do you remember most about that first marathon, thinking back on it?
Crossing that finish line.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what my injury was, but it was a relief. And it was an awesome relief. You know, it was a great feeling.
You also did a great thing. You raised money for the Whitman Walker Clinic. I mean, in support of AIDS patients, which back then was a huge charity that funneled a lot of runners and raised a ton of money for a great cause, and is still a wonderful cause. So that must have felt really great too.
It did, and I hope, I haven't heard anything about it of late, the Whitman Walker Clinic and the fundraising for it, but I hope it's still ongoing.
It is, but the running program, I don't think is as I don't think there is a run training program anymore to benefit Whitman Walker, but Whitman Walker is still in existence and still in need of support. So yeah, it's in the DC area and still is running strong.
Yeah, that was a great program. They had very good coaches. I made some lifetime friends, but I lost one of those friends, a number of years back, actually. But we gained friendships and we continued running. And my next step was learning of the DC, I guess it was the second iteration of the DC Marathon. What year that was, probably 2003 or four, somewhere around then.
The National Marathon. I think it was the National Marathon then. Was that the one?
Okay. Yeah, right. And actually that's how I met the running club. I didn't know of MCRRC, our Montgomery County Roadrunners Club, until that time when a gentleman named John Noble was a fill-in coach when actually most of the coaches for that training program for that iteration of the National Marathon did come out of the running club. I'm trying to think of Barbara Wagner was the lead coach. And that was my introduction to the running club. From there, I actually went to John. I'd already run by this point, I think about six marathons. And I was not ever in the first time marathon training program. I went to John Noble and he was the director of that program at that time, 2001, maybe it was 2002. And John said, Harold, I think you should talk with this gentleman by the name of Mike Broderick, who's just starting a training program for experienced marathon runners. And I did. And so I jumped from the first time program that I never did run into the experienced marathon training program, where I promptly met Julie. I don't know if it was Julie the first year that you were in it, in the program?
I think you were in the program a lot longer than me, but let's go through some dates. So when did you join the Experienced Marathoners program for the first time?
It's first year, 2002.
I think my first year doing the Experienced Marathon program was in 2009.
Oh,
perhaps.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the Experienced Marathoners program, what it was like when you joined it the first year, because we were not involved at that point and really didn't know much about it. So tell us what it was like from your end and what the training looked like.
Good question. Of course, you know, Mike Broderick well. A few coaches, it wasn't just Mike, a few coaches from the first time marathon training program decided that the running club really could use a more advanced training program. And And they really did develop a more advanced, even though I didn't do the first time program, I know that the XNP program we're talking about was much more advanced. Mike had a training program all planned out, on paper for every runner, just the way it's done today, with his concepts of how training, and I won't call it advanced training, but it certainly was more advanced than the first-time program was. Now, in 2002, there were four coaches, smaller group than you see in a lot of group training programs. And I recall two different numbers of runners. 72, I recall, 68. Maybe one had the coaches in it, maybe one number did not. That's the number of runners. I was a so-called back of the pack, which is a phrase I don't like, because there's no, to me, there's no such thing as a back of the pack marathon runner. Anybody that runs marathons or can run a marathon is a front of the pack, if you ask me. But that's where I was. I met again a few. There were very, I can tell you who they were. There were two other runners with me. We bonded. We stayed together for multiple years running. And we stuck to the program. Mike was a great teacher, and he was very knowledgeable. Interesting story, Julie. You know it probably as well as I do with Mike. And Mike died way too young. If he were here today, he'd be nationally recognized. He would have been nationally recognized as a great running coach in this country. And we all learned from him. I learned a lot from him. He was also teaching the coaching program for RRCA. And I attended the program that he was given the leeway to lead and first run independent of the rest of RRCA. Went up to Hartford for Mike's and Janet Hatt. Janet Hamilton, right? I mean,
Anna Hamilton. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's still coaching.
That was the first coaching course they alone, the two of them, and they were partners in this process, conducted in Hartford. And the reason I went to that is Mike had already asked me to be a coach. I was the first runner he asked to be a coach, but I wasn't coach certified by RCA. So I went to that course up in Hartford, became coach certified, and just continued to learn a lot from Mike over the years.
Can you talk about Mike a little bit? You were starting to just a little bit about how he influenced you as a coach and a person, because I think when I think of you, Harold, I connect you immediately to Mike. And to me, you have carried on his legacy so beautifully. So can you share a little bit about Mike and who he was as a person and a coach?
Yeah, Julie, it's interesting. I would say this on the summary end of it. Mike and I were running bound together, but we were not close friends. He had asked me to be a coach. I went to coaching school, began to do some of what Mike did, but I don't know of anybody that could repeat what he did, where he gave up a law career, and he totally gave it up to become involved with both coaching and physical training. And that never came across my mind as a possibility. But I did glean a lot of knowledge from Mike, you know, maybe 10% of his knowledge while he was with us. He passed away, Joy, in 2010. at the age of 56. Mike had a library of books and treatises and anything you don't know. It was amazing to go into his house, and I did. I mean, I visited his house. We would have coaches meetings at his house. It was just a small group of coaches. And he had bookshelves full of material on running, physical training. I remember that vividly. Took ill, and you remember all this. I just stepped up. Again, we were a small group of coaches and covered for him. You know, the diagnosis came late of his cancer. Came late, my phrase, late, my word. And he passed away in between Marine Corps Marathon and New York City Marathon. And you know that well, since you did fundraising in memory of Mike for lung cancer research from those who were going to go forward to New York to run that marathon. What had happened, honestly? I mean, I got closer to Mike as one of his coaches, of course. I ran the Marine Corps Marathon in 2010, so right before Mike passed. And I had a very good run for me. I can't remember whether it was a PR or a BQ or both. Might have been. You know what? I said, I got to go talk to Mike. And I had been keeping in touch with Mike on the telephone. Mike was keeping up with XMP the whole time, as sick as he was. And so I said, hey, Mike, I'm going to come by and visit. Is it okay? He said, oh, yeah, please. So I went to the hospital. Of course, the marathon was Sunday. I think I took Monday off for recovery, and I went in on Tuesday to see Mike. I go in, and Mike's not in his room, but Jill, his wife, and his sister, Susan, are there. And I learned that Mike had been taken down for some radiation treatment. But my point, on his on the table next to the bed, it was his BlackBerry. He was a BlackBerry carrier. And he was using that to keep up to speed with what was going on with the runners. And he already knew what I had run and everything else. So we found Mike, we decided to go, actually a group of doctors came in his room looking for him also. We said, we thought he went down for radiation. And they said, well, they were trying to locate him themselves. Kind of strange. But anyway, longer story short, I had a serious talk with Mike that day. I did not know, I mean, to be truthful, I did not know how ill he was. But he asked his wife and his sister to leave us talk. And actually, Mike and I went for a walk. And he was carrying oxygen with him, but we went for a walk in the hallways of the hospital. And he wanted to talk to me about taking over XMP. If you think about it, this is my memory of that. There were two things he wanted to talk to me about. And remember, we had the commonality of both being lawyers. So there was a commonality there. There was a concern, a commonality about XMP. I was one of his coaches. But again, I say again, I did not realize how close he was to passing. He might have, but there's more to that story, and I'm not even going to share. But the other thing he wanted to talk about was XMP and the continuation of XMP. The two, to me, the most important things he had on his mind, which actually makes sense when you think about it. You know, his wife and his baby. They didn't have children. But XMP was, in effect, his baby, and it was. We talked about who might be the best to do this and who might be the best to help with that and who might, you know, and we talked through it all. And kind of hate to go over it. It's sad to me to be thinking about it again. But that's driven me. You know, I told Mike, I've got it covered. And I know some people think, well, that's the only reason Harold's doing this. And it's not. I mean, there are other reasons. But I told Mike, I've got it covered.
Harold, and that's beautiful.
And you do have it covered. And we know now what XNP looks like. And looking back to what you described, the first year of 68 people and four coaches and what it's grown to today, we both know Mike would be extremely proud of what you've done with XNP, and not just the growth, but what it the community that it stands for. It's such a strong community, and the bonds that you mentioned before, people that you become friends with or from lifelong friends, that's what happens through XNP. And I think, I didn't know Mike as well as you and Julie did. I was trained by him like you were, the RCA course, and knew him that way. I did not know him as a coach, but from everything I know, and Julie has told me that you've definitely really honored his legacy. So tell us a little bit about what XNP looks like today, like compared to before. How big is it now? How many coaches do you have?
Yeah, I'll answer that, Lisa, but before I'm going to go back to a much earlier year, because I appreciate your words of what I've done, but I've got to add, there are a lot of people that have done a lot. And that year after Mike passed was the largest turnout of registered runners we've ever had. And the reason that occurred, the people that knew Mike and that had been in the program earlier, everybody wanted to support that program in memory of Mike. It was a pulling together, drawing together of a lot of runners that just came. I hardly knew what I was doing, taking over for Mike. Okay, but these people, all these 225 runners registered in 2011 for the program, and I think we might have had 160 or no, maybe not even that many the year before. And I can find that figure somewhere, but in 2010, the year Mike passed away. So a lot more showed up to support the program. So there were a lot of runners that supported it. Every coach I asked, I think Mike might have asked them too, please stay on as a coach. They all did. They all did. It was maybe six or seven or eight of us then. I'm not sure. But there was an outpouring of support. And I hear you. Yeah, I did my little part of carrying things forward then. That was the striking year that I will never forget, 2011, when my first year as the program director. And look, I could say great things about some of the few other coaches that we know, Steve Hayes came to speak to XNP in our first group run a couple of weeks ago for this season. Steve is a great coach. And I run into a problem. I had to turn to somebody like Steve, say, hey, Steve, what the hell do I do now? But that's the first year as my being program director. But Lisa, you asked about the more recent years. We have 150 runners this year, which is actually a slight bit low for us. But we're going through a struggle right now that I have mixed feelings about, that I actually talked to Mike about, limiting the slowness, the time of the runners. Mike threw that idea out. He and I did talk about it one time, but Mike didn't, his conclusion was, no, let's not do that. In other words, he was thinking of limiting the pace groups, and this is at LSD, to somewhere around 11, 11, 15, 11:30. I'm back you know, the club has this, you know, a place for every pace theme. And I agree with that pace, that theme. But it is difficult to coach in a group program so many paces and so many people on so many long runs that we're considering. This is a year, I'm bringing this up now. This year, we lost my slowest coaches. And frankly, I'm probably near the slowest coach now, which is pretty slow. But I'm considering that again for the program. But that's where we lost our numbers this year. Not because we did a limit, but it's causing me now more to think about it. So 150 runners, we've got about 10 coaches. We've expanded the coach list. We do the program much like Mike did it. Julie, you'll get a kick out of this. Mike sent me his Excel spreadsheets and some handwritten sheets too. Before he passed away, I actually still use Mike's Excel spreadsheets with its formulas for placing runners. Now I've gotten smarter with Excel and I get someone to help me with it, but I actually still, the program is still much like Mike ran it. We run into the same issues you probably run into, trying to get these runners to run LSD, long, slow distance pace. And even that is much the same as it was. So there's a lot the same, Lisa.
Harold, talk a little bit about that. How do you calculate pace groups for runners? And how do you place them in their pace groups? And how do you encourage them to, you know, embrace that long, slow distance run? So how do you place them? And then what do you tell them about those pace groups? Because I think, you know, we run into it too. People think their easy run pace is one pace, but as coaches, we say, no, it's another pace. So how do you calculate it? And then how do you encourage them to stick to that?
Yeah, I'll get specific, but in a general sense, what misleads people is that we call the pace groups out by the slowest pace they're going to run every week, LSD, you know, long, slow distance. A lot of people just don't want to embrace that term. So listen, some of my coaches even were a problem. I remember, no names. Well, I remember one of our current coaches, when he first came to XMP, he just had a royal battle with Mike over LSD and LSD running. And that coach firmly now believes in the philosophy. That is an ongoing thing. How do we calculate them? Probably the same way you guys may do it. We put everything into 10K race time terms. We want people to run and give us a current race time. We much prefer something shorter than a marathon race or even I get ultra marathon times from people to calculate paces. And it's a marathon training program, so they think we really want marathon times, and we really don't. But so we calculate down things down to a 10K race pace. I mean, Mike's formula, it's close to what's his name? I'm drawing a blank.
Jack Daniels, Daniels running formula.
That's what Mike used to use. Mm-hmm. Mike switched more to a McMillan. Yeah. Greg, I have the name right. McMillan formula. So in any event, to be specific, Lisa, we add 25%. So if you're an 8-minute 10K runner, add 2 minutes to, and that's your LSD. And we calculate these numbers for every individual runner, sure, the same way you would do. But then we have to group them together. And that's the first time I had an experience with Mike where he really straightened me out. He had asked me to put, he had all the numbers run on the Excel spreadsheet, and he asked me to put them into groups. And I'm trying to average times and so forth. But Mike used judgment. There is judgment in the process. It's not all by a mathematical formula. And I remember the first time I did it for Mike, I got chewed out. Not chewed, it wasn't really that bad, but Mike took what I gave him and he totally redid it. And he never asked me again to set the pace books up. But we set them in 15-second LSD windows. And I look somewhat, I'll take the outliers out. That's a statistical thing to do. And so our paces for the same pace group from year to year may be a little bit different.
So it's complicated because from what I'm hearing you say, of course, you provide each participant with their individual paces, but realistically, you have to put that into, you have to group them. So you'll have someone in a pace group who has probably a distinctly different LSD long, slow distance pace than someone in the same pace group, and everyone's running together. So how do you manage that? How do you coach your runners who are in these pace groups to say, while you're in the same pace group, for purposes of your long runs, when you're running together, your pace is actually easier than the same person, than someone else in your group. How do you help those runners understand that that may mean that someone's going to be running ahead of you in the same pace group, and that's okay?
Well, you just said it. I mean, that's what we tell them. We don't actually hand them their initial numbers for their 10K and their LSD pace. We gather them ourselves, and then we give them normally is their pace group. And they know they are a spread in that group. And we tell them the same thing. And it goes further than that, as you know. What, you know, you tell them also, look, not every day is going to be your best day or your good day. You may not have a good day. Drop back a group. There's always, hopefully, going to be somebody behind that you can pick up with. But they are generally in those groups. I mean, these groups, it depends. The faster groups are smaller. And they normally do stay together, even though there is a little bit of spread within them. But they can drop back. They do listen to that. We don't want them to pick it up faster. Guess what? I'm sure that happens on occasion, but not, to my chagrin, if I ever see it. I do catch things, even from where I'm running, because we do outs and backs, and I can see what's going on the way back. So yeah. It's a problem we all have, trying to get people to understand the importance of that slow, particularly that slow run. But even going to track and you get them to do a marathon pace run, aside from the fact that that's not their intended marathon pace, and you got to get that through to people too, it's just a training pace. They'll run it hard, harder than a marathon, you know, do 800 meters at marathon. But, well, we all can do that, but then they want to pick it up. Well, you got to kick them in the butt normally to try to get them to slow down. You always have to keep after them. Yeah. Even those faster paces, you need to have some room left in you. Don't push it to the brink.
Pace discipline. We always call it pace discipline. So Harold, you've seen over, how many years you've been coaching, probably thousands of runners. Do you see a common theme or a common characteristic of those who see success at the marathon distance? What do they have in common? What training principles? What gets them to the marathon successfully?
Well, I think it's our methodology. There are exceptions. Some, We're a group program. It's hard to look at individuals individually. Some can do well with faster pacing. It just it depends on them physically and where are they with their running. You know, just to, you know, take fast twitch and muscles and try to convert them to operate like slow twitch, you know, it can take years. And some of them have that done. Some of them don't have it done. Hell, I was one of those that didn't have it done. So it's a variation in the individuals, but I really feel if they will only stick to their prescribed paces. But again, we got to realize it only works as well as we work getting those numbers set up for them. I mean, if our number, garbage in, garbage out on the Excel spreadsheet. But and we always try to catch that. Every year I get it for some runners, and we have a fair number of new runners. So it's some of it's new to them. All right, just go out and run a 5. I don't care. Run a 5K and give me your time. But it's hard to monitor too. It is. But the secret, I think, is in the program, which is Mike Broderick's program. I haven't really changed a lot. I changed very minor things. We're doing some different speed work than he did. I actually took out when Mike started another program. He and Steve Hayes started the Boston Bound program. Probably Julie helped me out around 70, not 70.
It was 2006 or 2007 that he started.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense.
The Boston Bound program, which is now
B2B. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Harold, speaking of that, what do you say to runners who sign up for a group program like XMP, where they have a very specific goal? Like I ran a 10K, the 10K reflects that I am capable of running a 3:14. So I'm going to train to run the 3:14, and they're hyper-focused on the 3:14. And then they don't achieve the 3:14. What do you say to those runners in terms of if they feel disappointed or frustrated, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, the same way you would. I tell them right off, and I get this, I'm intending to run a 3:14 or whatever. I want to run under 4 hours. I say to everyone that says that, and they normally will speak that sometime, either when they register or later on. Don't pay attention to that. Don't get married to that. Do the training, buy the training program, and you will get your best results. There's always a caveat, and there is a caveat in marathon running. Who the hell knows what the weather's going to be on your marathon day? I ran a marathon, I don't know, it turned to be 90 some degree humidity, and I just said to hell with this. I didn't DNF, I finished it, but I just around mile 14 I said to hell with this, I'm going to hurt myself. And so I just tuned it down. Well, that can happen to any runner. And they don't have to be 80 years old to feel it. You'll feel that at, 18 years old. So there are a lot of, you got to be open-minded. You tell them the same thing. Train by this program. The 10K number you have or I use will tell me if it's feasible. If it tells me this person, it's not feasible. There's no way this person's going to do the 3:14. Be lucky if they want a 50-minute PR or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's kind of ridiculous. So you got to tell them. You got to, if you know. I do. I mean, you got to be honest with them. I don't do it to be a caveat or cover my backside to those people. Just tell them, look. Now, maybe 2 years, 3 years, whatever. I hope you can make your 3:14. But the numbers may not suggest that. And then there are a lot of other factors.
Do you ever Do you ever advise runners to kind of set different types of goals rather than time-based goals, like that really hard and felt like you said so many factors can come into play and they're aiming for that 3:14 or sub-4, whatever it is, you know, if it's hot day or they just don't feel great and they don't hit it. Are there other goals that you ever, you know, kind of have your runners focus on?
You know, not really, Lisa. In our program, they're normally experienced marathoners. Although we often take one or two runners that have not completed a marathon, but they've shown other long distance training or running. So we don't normally have to deal with that. You know, what I would do if I were in first time program, hey, just cross the finish line. I mean, you know, your first marathon, even your second, your third marathon, if you PR, what amazing achievement. Stick with that as a goal. But don't stick with a precise number. I mean, that's to me a little silly to do. But that's me.
We couldn't agree more. I think one of the points of these group programs, whichever one you choose, wherever you live, is to enjoy the process. And certainly folks who run XMP or programs, any type of group program, in a year, in 6 months even from the race, they're not going to remember their time. They're going to remember the experiences that they gain and the camaraderie from participating in those programs. So switching gears a little bit, because it is not lost on us that you are 80, you are still competitively racing. In fact, we both ran into you at a race on Monday where you, as usual, won your age group. We want to ask you, what helps to keep you motivated to stay competitive? And could you provide just some guidance and advice to folks who are continuing to run through the decades? What advice do you have to stay healthy and to stay motivated?
Yeah. That's tough. What I do is I train year long. I don't take season breaks unless there's some sort of injury. But to take it to 80 and beyond is mind-boggling to me. I mean, to be honest about it. And I get a sadness when I see some of the people that I know moving up in age and it hitting them harder than it hits me. Listen, just me directing. There's something wrong with me directing XMP for more years than Mike Broderick was ever able to do that. It's upsetting. And when I see older runners, it's a little different subject, falling by the wayside, and it's normally for physical reasons, no other reasons, it's sad to me.
Do you think
go ahead, Lisa.
Do you think that you have just some genetic, you know, gift to be able to keep running, or is there something that you're doing to make sure that you don't fall by the wayside? What do you think is the difference?
It's a genetic gift. Now, genetics can cover a whole lot of things, including mental outlook. But the one thing I talked to one of our older runners about, neither he nor I realize our own age. And I think that makes a big difference. I mean, it's almost stupidity on our parts, but it's beneficial. I don't think about my age. He doesn't think about his age. But at the same time, I see him declining, and that upsets me. So there's a lot of genetics. There's a lot of being smart, too. I mean, I've seen runners as they get older, they're not as smart, but they don't know when to cut back. We hear that, listen to your body. And I used to say to myself, what the hell does that mean? Listen to your body. Your body's not going to talk, but it does tell you. It does tell you things that you got to pay attention to.
So what's changed for you because clearly you used to be a serial marathoner, which you're not anymore, but you are still a competitive runner. So what have you changed in listening to your body to continue to compete?
I honestly think, Julie, that I'm not a long distance runner, long distance being marathon. And really, I really do think I'm more cut out for shorter distance. But 10 miles, cherry blossom. And I saw Lisa there after the race. In fact, Lisa told me I won my age group. I didn't know. So as I've, and I feel like I'm declining. I do feel declining in longer distance, like marathon, like that marathon I mentioned. In the older days, hell, I would have pushed on in the heat and humidity, but now I sort of know better. But the heat and humidity takes a bigger toll. And Lisa asked me, how did I feel the next day after running our 5K? And I was sore. I was sore just doing a 5K. A lot of it to me is in the men, you know, I try to eat well. I'm not the best sleeper, but I, you know, we gotta have to have a sound diet. We gotta hydrate. A lot of runners forget to hydrate. I'm sure you've seen it. And hydration is a moving target for every one of us. And just trying to stay healthy, knock on wood. I've been able to avoid any serious injury. My last serious injury was a Achilles surgery. It didn't rupture, but I had multiple tears. And yet I did not miss an XMP season. I did miss the Boston bombing, thank the Lord, because I still wasn't recovered from the surgery yet enough to run the marathon. But anyway, I think it's just luck on my part to be able to keep running. After that surgery, which was maybe 6 years ago, I started running PRs in a lot of races after I was really recovered. And a lot of that, I'll tell you what it was. And I tell this to another runner we know who just had the same surgery I had 6 years ago. There was such a joy in me from being able to run again. It was an utter high. No drugs, but just a high from being able to run again that drove me to some PRs. And now, you know, I'm happy to run. I don't really care. It's nice to be finished first in your age group, okay? But it's not the most important thing to me. I wish more of our runners in my age group and the last couple of age groups could still be out there running. Sadly, it isn't that way. But my outlook is, you know, primarily genetics has done me luck or wonders, and then the outlook of I don't know my age, and I'm going out there to run, and I'm really competing against myself, which is what we all probably should be doing anyway. Let's just do the best we can do, and strategize for that. No, I'm slipping a bit. I don't want to kid anybody. But so what? I still enjoy it. I don't think, listening, for those people listening, I mean, running, to me, is the smartest thing we can do for longevity. But I also see walkers out there. And I think, you know, good for them. Good for those walkers. They don't even have to be run walkers. Good for them for longevity. Get some exercise and get outdoors. And I still travel a bit. It's my best way of seeing the environment I'm traveling in. And I still love it. Plus, as I said earlier, I don't remember my age. People remind me. I don't even want to hear about it.
I love that you talk about mindset, Harold, because I think that's a struggle for a lot of us aging runners, is that we are stuck in what we used to be able to do and comparing ourselves to what we used to be able to do. So having that mindset of the appreciation of being out there and running, like you said, for yourself and competing with yourself and dealing with what you have at that moment. I think that's such an important point to really drive home to, you know, a lot of the runners we coach, they have a frustration of like, I'm not as fast as I used to be. I'm not running the marathons like I used to be able to run, but you say, well, you know what? I'm better at 5Ks. I'm better at 10Ks. I can, you know, I can do well there. I can feel good about my performance there. And I think that's such an important point, is to not get stuck in have that mindset of a positive mindset. So I think that is really, I hope that listeners, especially those of us that are starting to age and see the deterioration that inevitably comes with, you know, with age for most of us, that we can shift the mindset and still have that love and appreciation for running.
We all speak a common language. It would be good for getting all of our runners to understand these things. And by the way, I love what you all are doing. We see some of your runners, and you're being coached with you all, and I applaud that. And if you ever see something, you know, I mentioned one of our runners to Julie the other day after that race that I thought might be running a little too hard, but maybe not according to you all. But I want to be sure that my program coordinates with you all and your training of individual runners when it seems appropriate.
Yeah, we so appreciate having, you know, that synergy that we have, because like you said, you provide something that a lot of runners really want, is that community and the camaraderie and the guidance that they want. And like you said, it's hard to look individually when you have 150 runners, it's hard to look individually. So we can help with that, where we can look individually, but we know that they want the camaraderie of the program that you've set up and that you've really grown over the years. So it's nice for us to be able to do that together, where we can give them the individual guidance, but they get the benefit of the program and the coaching that you guys have. So we have really appreciated that ability. You know, we have a lot of runners who come to say, I want to run with a group. And we say, well, the best group to run with, you know, for our marathoners that are, you know, experienced marathoners, we say the best group is, you know, go join XMP and we can give you some individual guidance. So we really appreciate it. And we know our philosophies are so aligned. And I think that goes back to what we talked about before, is Mike Broderick and, you know, what he taught all of us.
Right.
And I think we have that in common. We have the same philosophies, and you've got the big group and the big numbers, and we've got the ability to look individually at runners. And so it's been wonderful. And we're just, you know, so grateful to you for sharing your knowledge as a coach and as a runner that we both have so admired. When we saw you at the 5K, we both said, you know what, we need Harold on the podcast, because we've admired you for so many years. And you are humble and you don't talk about yourself. And we're just grateful that you humored us and came on the podcast to talk with us and share your knowledge today. And you're doing something right, because you've had many, many years of successful running. You have built an amazingly cohesive and successful program over the years, and people adore you. So you're doing something right. And we are just, we're kind of fangirls. So we were really excited to have you on the podcast today and really appreciate it. So we're looking forward to seeing you at hopefully some more races this summer. Do you have anything planned, anything on the calendar?
I'll do the July 4th autism race. I normally do. It's only a few blocks away from where I live. I have no excuse for not getting there. I think I'll run Marine Corps this year.
Wow.
Last year I had COVID. I was supposed to run it last year, ended up with COVID. Took me out of that race. But I want to say the same thing about your coaching too. You were very kind to talk about me and XMP, but you all do great stuff too. And our runners, most of them know about you all. And I know you know, you work with some of them, and we don't compete at all. We complement one another. And that's and you're right, Lisa. We have the same coaching philosophies. Probably got it from Mike Broderick in the first place, but we've extended it. And good for all of us. So I thank you all So for me, this is it's give back time. I don't normally talk about myself, but when you guys ask me to do this, it's give back time. I've got to give back to the running community more than I have. So here I am, glad to do it.
Well, thank you so much, Harold. It was such a treat to talk with you and learn a little bit more about your life outside of running too, which we didn't know. And we just want to extend our congratulations to you with all of your success in running this program, but also with your own running. And we look forward to seeing you at many races in the future and just keep doing what you're doing. You're such a joy and we're so grateful to have you as part of our community. So thanks so much for joining us today, Harold.
Back at the both of you. All right. Bye. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others and please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.